are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Orin J. Silver, and we are talking about, well, at this point, I think we're talking about empathy. And that's another quality, because what you just described was a moment where you did something with, you touched someone in a very innocent way with a good intention, but then you learn something about what that meant for her. And that really leads me into the quality of empathy, which I think you describe it. It really helps to heal the pain of isolation. And in these days, isolation is endemic to our population, I believe. And especially after coming off of sheltering in place. I mean, I find for myself, I'm finding it hard to jump back in to life and relationships and face-to-face. Still today, even though we're able to do that. So What do you have to say about the quality of empathy?
Well, what a beautiful capacity that we have as human beings to connect with one another, to resonate with one another. Empathy is this resonance of the heart that we can actually feel into the experience of others from the inside, from how it actually feels for one another. And one of the things that I talk about in the book, Justine, is that all of these different qualities, these different capacities that we have as human beings that are beautiful, everything from courage and curiosity to resolve, contentment, or forgiveness, these are innate. These are innate capacities that we enter the world with. It's like we can learn any language when we're born. In the same way, our heart can manifest and express itself in all of these different ways, but they need to be strengthened. They need to be cultivated. And empathy is one of the key ones that we have a lot of research about, that we are born with mirror neurons, with a capacity like emotional contagion. We feel what other people are feeling. But if we are not, if that capacity isn't encouraged, if it isn't mirrored, if it isn't validated, it atrophies. So empathy, I think, is like a profound key for so much of the violence and devastation that the human species has wrought, whether it's empathy for those that we see through the lens of the other, or whether it's empathy for the natural world, recognizing that we can experience this sense of connection even across the lines of different species. When we have empathy, we naturally move to care and protect one another, just like the right hand moves to soothe the left. So it dissolves our sense of separation and isolation, brings us into relationship, and positions us to protect life, to care. The challenge, of course, is that our whole economy pits us against one another and sort of, you know, fetishizes individualism. But empathy allows us to start to heal that, to bridge that.
You say it's innate. And I saw something. There was an article that I saw many years ago, and if you can look it up, it's called The Rescuing Hug. And this was where two infants were twins born premature. And the protocol in the hospital was that they go into separate incubators. But there was a nurse, and this is another quality you talk about, courage. She had the courage to buck the system. And she, because one of the twins was thriving and doing well, and the other was fading away and was not thriving. And the nurse insisted to put them in the same incubator. And here, these babies, they're just totally, like, not even full-term babies. The one sister who's thriving reaches out her arm and hugs her sister. And that caused her sister, her whole physiology changed, and she started to thrive.
That's beautiful.
So I just wanted to mention that story because you mentioned how empathy is really innate in us. And I think that this story and this happening, this report shows that that's true. Anything you want to say or add to that? Because I'm very excited about the idea that we really have this innate in us. And how do we call it forth in our culture these days? Yeah. Because as you say, so much is being reported with hate and violence. And
It's a beautiful story, Justine. I think I have heard that story before, and I think it does speak very powerfully to the transformative potential of not just empathy, but love. And I, you know, we know that babies, human infants, need love and touch in order to grow, in order to thrive. And that these capacities can be and are distorted through experience and education, that we can be, you know, we can be educated to hate, we can be educated to have prejudice. And so how do we restore those capacities? This is a real question for us, I think, today as a species. How do we weave them into our institutions, into our educational system? How do we weave them into policy? You know, what would the justice system look like if it had more empathy in it? What would immigration policy or policing look like if it were restructured with human empathy as a core value? There are many ways to strengthen empathy. You know, there's research around things like training in emotional intelligence. The practice of nonviolent communication, which I am trained in and teach, is a very potent vehicle, I think, for recollecting and strengthening our access to empathy that rests upon recognizing universal shared emotions and the underlying human needs that give rise to those emotions. The fact that while we may differ in our interpretation of events or our ideas and beliefs and views about what to do, that if you go deeply enough, part of what makes us human is that we all long for some of the same things. Like, we long to be able to give our children safety, education, nourishment. We long to be able to live in peace with our neighbors and our community and celebrate the, you know, momentous occasions in life. We long to be understood, to have respect and belonging, dignity, purpose, sovereignty. These are aspects of what it is to be human that are shared.
So you're saying that this is like a baseline. This is no matter what our political affiliation or our ethnic affiliation, underneath that, it's the baseline of being human, what we all really are looking for.
That's the premise of humanistic psychology, right? Is this idea, some would disagree with, but that's the premise, is that this is part of what makes us human, and that when we can touch into that, when we can view and understand each other from that perspective, that gives rise to empathy. And what I love about this approach is that, you know, we can argue until we're out of breath about, well, is that true or not? And what is human nature? I'm less interested in that as a metaphysical discussion. I'm more interested in what works. What is it that brings us closer to empathy? What is it that allows us to reach across the gaps that are present and divides? Seeing in this way, understanding and listening in this way, does that. And so whether it's, you know, metaphysically or philosophically true or not is less important to me as what's effective. And, you know, dialogue projects around the world in areas of ethnic conflict and genocide all rely on building empathy and human connection. That's the foundation of making peace.
Exactly, exactly. There is a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King. I think the quote goes like this. When he's talking about basic human warmth, and he explains that all life is interrelated. We are all caught up in an inescapable network of mutuality,
yes,
tied into a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. We are all made to live together because of the interrelated structure of reality. I mean, this goes into quantum physics and what they've discovered, that, yeah, we are all interrelated. And so that has its effect. Even if we can't make an outward expression of peace, I believe we can do it inwardly and project that out as our intention. And somehow that is helpful.
It can serve as a basis for our work in the world. I think that some of the challenges that we're facing, you know, obviously require more than that.
Of course.
Right? You know, yeah. But it's a beautiful starting place. Yeah. Yeah. That quote from Dr. King was from his last Christmas sermon speech in 1967. It's a very famous quote. He also said, I'm going to paraphrase here, something like, men hate each other because they fear each other, and they fear each other because they do not know each other, and they do not know each other because they are separated from each other. Mm-hmm. He's kind of drawing there the relationship between segregation and not actually having proximity to one another, real proximity to violence and hatred. And, you know, I think we see this very tragically in Israel and Palestine right now exploding, where the lack of human proximity and connection breeds fear and hate and violence. And many of the radical projects that have been working for years and even to this day continue working to try to find another way forward often are founded upon bringing Israelis and Palestinians together. Palestinians within the occupied territories, or many Palestinians who also live in Israel, and building relationship, bridging,
yes,
that gap of separation.
Yes, yes. This is a important, a very, very important moment in our evolution as human beings, as we go forward. And those of us who commit to developing empathy, I think, will be of help. And so thank you for that. I'm here with Orin J. Sofer, and he is the author of Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. with Oren J. Sofer, and he is the author of Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. We're just tapping into just a few little tidbits of what you present in this book and all the qualities. And one of the qualities was and is curiosity. And this is learning from a willingness of not knowing. And I want to tell a story because this one really moved my heart. And I think it demonstrates a little bit of what you are talking about. And I was watching MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, and she does something called Deadline White House. And she was speaking. I just caught the tail end of this program. She was talking with Harry Dunn, a Capitol Police officer who was on duty on January 6th with the attack on the Capitol. And it's one of those moments in TV where it's real. There's a real, you feel it. You just feel it in your gut. And they were talking about hate and anger going on in the culture and the lack of collaboration. And Nicole asked Harry, she said, "What can we do about this?" And it was a real question. You felt it. It was my question. It was her question. And Harry paused for a moment and he said, "I don't know." It was so powerful. It just like for a moment, and he paused. And then he went on to say, "But I can't do nothing." And then he went on to say, there's always something that can be done. Everybody has a little part of something they can do, something for the betterment of others. And for me, he really embodied that sense of curiosity and letting go of all of our concepts and saying, "I don't know," and then sinking down into that. So I'd love to hear your comment on this. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful, beautiful expression of, some of the key messages I'm also sharing in the book that we don't know. We don't know. And as you know, you just shared so eloquently, there's too much pain and suffering in the world for us to respond to everything. But that means that there's also too much for us to respond to nothing. We have to do something. My hope, and I don't know, none of us know where we're going, right? None of us know what's going to happen. But the least we can do is for each of us to do our part, is to each of us to look inside and to really ask, what is mine to do? There's humility in that. There's dedication. There's resolve in that. And what I find is that it brings energy. It brings momentum when we are engaged in doing something. It allows us to focus and channel our energy into one thing that we care about. How many people are, not doing that? And what would happen if all of us started to do that more and more? And then, that positions us to make different, changes on a structural level. One of the themes that I explore in the book is the sense that some of the problems we're facing are too urgent and too entrenched for individual choices or actions to affect. We know that no amount of recycling or walking or biking is actually going to stop the ecological crisis. We need drastic, immediate structural changes. So we need to work on that level. But structural changes happen because of things that individuals do in positions of power. So how do we create the influence to make, those kinds of policy changes? It's by how we show up and what we do and where we apply pressure in different ways.
Boy, I see that. You mentioned the word resolve, and that's one of the qualities that you also talk about in your writing. And, you know, resolve requires self-discipline, but you really go into what is discipline? What is it being disciple of? And what I love, you pose a wonderful question for us. When you're talking about resolve, you say, can you fall in love with the vision behind your resolution? That took me into, like, rather than efforting and and all that stuff that I put myself into, saying, okay, I will do this and I'm going to force myself to do this. No, if I just go deep into it and find the love of why I'm even doing it. Am I getting that in some sort of correct alignment that you would see? Or
maybe? Absolutely. I'm so touched that that moved you. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about before with energy, right? And this difference between this kind of willpower, forcing, and driving ourselves, and the more sustainable and renewable wellspring of energy that comes from willingness, from, no, I'm doing this because I want to, because I care about this, right? And so you pointed to sort of the wordplay there with discipline, and that question, we can say, well, discipline includes the word disciple. So, like, what do I want to study? What do I want to be a disciple of? Yeah. And that can be a way into finding this capacity for determination that doesn't come from contraction or force, but rather from aspiration and beauty and love. And I want to maybe just kind of zoom out for a second and just frame some of the conversation we're having about, you know, these word that I use in the book is qualities, these different capacities we have or different traits, we can develop them into traits. Is the whole thing is based upon this understanding that who we are and how we experience and relate to life is not fixed, and that we can play a role in shaping our inner world and the way in which we live by making different choices about how we pay attention. How do we pay attention every day? What are we practicing? We're always practicing something because our hearts and minds are designed to learn. They're malleable. They're always being shaped by everything we say and we do. So when we start paying more attention, we begin to recognize, become aware of how we're actually living, what it is that we are ingraining in ourselves, and we can start to steer in a different direction. So instead of, say, every day becoming more irritable and grumpy and self-centered or something, you know, we can practice by choosing how we place our attention and how we pay attention and how we live, can practice becoming kinder, more patient, more generous, or whatever it is that we want to develop. And so the book is really like a roadmap, a series of practical instructions to do that.
Right. You mentioned a quote in the book, and others have mentioned this quote recently on New Dimensions, and it's from Howard Thurman, the African-American philosopher and theologian who died in 1981. And he said, and I think this relates to the overall picture of the book, he says, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and go do that, because what the world needs is people who come alive. And I think this is part of what you're saying, because if we tap into these deep qualities and traits that are enlivening for ourselves and the planet, then we are acting out in that way. We are coming alive, and then we contribute our aliveness to the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that other beautiful quote of, you know, where does your deep joy meet the world's deep hunger and the world's deep need? Right? The more alive we are, the more aware we are, the more aware we are, the more we feel, and the more we feel, the more likely we are to respond to what's needed around us. Kind of, you know, I think one of the things that Dr. Thurman is pointing to there is the very structures and systems that are destroying the life support systems of the planet to kind of destroy our own vitality and aliveness, and kind of in order to live in a society that is so disconnected from a healthy, holistic way of being, a certain part of us has to shut off, has to become numb. And so the more we're able to reawaken that, the more we can be effective radical agents for change.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Orin, for being part of New Dimensions today. I've been speaking with Orin J. Sofer. He's the author of Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, orinjsofer.com. And he spells his name Orin, O-R-E-N-J-J-A-Y, Sofer, S-O-F-E-R, orinjsofer.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3802.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm David Shapiro.
I'm Richard Leiter. We're co-authors of Who Do You Want to Be When You Grow Old? Next time on New Dimensions, we'll be talking about the path of purposeful aging.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across 5 regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
This is